Hello and welcome to episode...
Season 3.
Hello and welcome to season 3. Episode 8 of The Good Robot Andes. My name is Andy Balaam and this is...
I'm Andy Cockerell and we're in the same room.
We're in the same room. It's happened before.
It's happening again.
And it's happening again.
Yeah. This is like The Happening, that M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong film that I haven't seen. In which people run away from the wind.
Mm. I've seen other films.
Which is silly.
No, so I've seen the one with one about the broken glass.
Unbroken?
Mr. Glass.
Unbreakable.
Unbreakable. I've seen Unbreakable and I thought that was... I thought it was really good.
It is good. But it's not as good as The Sixth Sense.
Well, The Sixth Sense is standard. It's a standard film done very well.
Yeah, it is. It is done. It is standard, and it is very competent.
Whereas I thought Unbreakable was a non-standard film, done reasonably well.
That's fair.
And then I thought that The Happening and
haven't
The
seen
Village.
That. I enjoyed The Village.
And the other one about the alien.
I haven't seen that. Signs.
Signs. I thought those were non-standard films done poorly.
Yeah. That's fair. I haven't seen Split, which is his latest, but I've heard it's very good. James McAvoy. Have you?
Yeah.
Oh, blimey. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the film that we're going to be talking about this evening is...
Hacksaw Ridge. Do you mean this morning? It's 12:30 in the morning.
Only in UTC.
True.
No.
Time is an illusion. Lunchtime, doubly so.
No, it's not. 036 in UTC is not. It is, let me get this right. It is 11:36 on the 9th of June.
Yeah.
UTC.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it is evening. Continue.
All right, I shall continue. So, the movie that we're talking about today is called Hacksaw Ridge.
Hacksaw Ridge, which is about...
This is a...
No! Hold it.
Oh, you have to guess it.
Hold it.
Oh, I nearly forgot the rules of the game then.
Okay, like I know...
Like is this where I do the saw voice?
Yeah.
Would you like to play a game?
No, could you do that more?
Yeah.
Would you like to play a game?
I've not seen any of the saw films.
Have you not?
So to me that just envisions a friendly uncle figure.
Yeah.
Who would like to play a game.
No. Anyway, Hacksaw Ridge.
Okay, so, not having seen Hacksaw Ridge, but having heard so much about it that I've forgotten, I would speculate that Hacksaw Ridge is a film about a psychopathic killer who hacks to death his victims, but later in the film experiences a kind of forgiveness and turning around. So by the end of the film, the hacker, the Hacksaw Ridger, is the Hack Ridger, sorry, is it's really hero of the film, and is, you know, there's a kind of healing, and
I'm enjoying this rambling.
And then by the end of the film, the hacker, the Hacksaw Ridger, is basically happy and good. And we all sympathise with the hacky Ridge Thora, and wish that we were like her.
Hmm. Is that it? That's wrong.
Yeah, okay.
You're as far from... Actually, you didn't, on this occasion, and I think on the last one, you didn't talk about being a rollicking Disney adventure, so slightly disappointed about that.
Yeah, no, so in this instance, I did not think that it was a cartoon about hacking ridges.
Yeah, it definitely isn't a cartoon. What I can tell you is it's a 2016 biographical war drama film.
2016.
Directed by Mel Gibson.
Yes.
He's back.
Yeah, he's intense. And I've heard he is. He's intense.
Yeah, the film is intense. And it details the experiences of a man called Desmond Doss, who was a conscientious objector in the Second World War. So he signed up for the army because he wanted to do his bit, but he didn't want to fire a weapon. In fact, he would not fire a weapon, and he would not get into combat.
Mm-hmm.
But he wanted to be a medic, a battlefield medic. And
so, So I've heard a little bit about this.
Okay.
Let's break this down.
Mm-hmm.
Did he think that fighting this war was wrong?
No. No.
So he wanted other people to kill people for him.
That's a good point, actually, because that does effectively happen in the film.
He wanted other people. He thought it was okay to kill people.
As long as he wasn't doing it.
He just didn't want to do it himself.
Indeed. Yeah. So I think he saw the war as being, although he didn't agree with it, he didn't agree with violence, he saw the war as being justified, and he wanted to go and help.
So how can you defend that position?
I don't know. All I can tell you is what I've seen in the film. It doesn't really get into that question.
Okay, so I'm supposed to be inspired by this film.
It is actually quite inspirational, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. But what I'll say is that it's a film with a bit of a split personality. In fact, maybe three personalities. There are three distinct personalities.
Okay. Hit me with personality one.
As he says, as Father Merrin says in The Exorcist, no, there is only one.
Mm-hmm.
But actually there are three in this film.
So Father Merrin, wrong.
Yeah, in this case. Mm-hmm. So the first third of the film takes place in Desmond Doss's hometown, in which we get some idea of why. He doesn't believe in violence.
Okay, so this is before he leaves.
Yes. So he's been brought up by Hugo Weaving, actually, plays his father.
Tell me about Hugo Weaving.
You know who Hugo Weaving is.
Nope.
He is a Smith in The Matrix.
What, Agent Smith?
Agent Smith.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So he plays his father.
Proper eminence.
Yeah, proper eminence, yeah. And he is... His father's a drunk, a bit of a mean drunk, a bit of a violent drunk.
Agent Smith.
Agent Smith, yeah.
He seems so rational.
Yeah, you seem so rational. You pay your taxes.
You're like a virus.
You help your landlady with her garbage.
Garbage.
Mr. Anderson.
One of these lives.
So in this film, he is definitely not rational or indeed... strong and stable.
strong and stable.
He's a bit of a mean drunk. He's a bit erratic and unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
And we see through flashback that Desmond, who's played by Andrew Garfield.
Andrew Garfield. One of these Garfields has a future.
The other does not.
One of them does not.
We see in flashback that he got into sort of physical fighting with his father in order to protect his mother.
Okay.
And in another incident, we see a fight between him and his brother. And we see that he is unhappy with physical violence and because he's seen what it has done to his father. What he doesn't realise is that his father, or maybe, yeah, I don't think he realises that his father is a World War I veteran. And has seen some pretty horrible things.
Well, that's the weird thing about World War II, right? The whole of World War II is so strongly in the context of World War I.
Yeah.
And World War I was so, in retrospect, so...
It should never have happened.
It was so much about... some leaders wanting to prove some kind of ego point.
Yeah. People flexing their muscles.
And it cost...
millions.
It cost lives like we can't...
And fought in actually, as we all see in Hacksaw Ridge, you know, most of the battles of World War One were a stalemate most of the time. But when the fighting did happen, it was just horrible hand-to-hand. Just horrible, you know. This kind of... World War One was the kind of... a clash of the way that wars used to be fought with modern mechanised warfare and automatic weapons and that kind of thing. You know, because they took horses to the battlefield and things like that in the First World War. Anyway, I digress slightly. So, yes, his father is very...
So, he's mentally... So this is World War II that we're talking about?
We are, yes. Yeah. So this is after the Japanese have bombed Pearl Harbor and people are being called up. And he decides to go. He doesn't tell anybody at that point that he's a pacifist and he wants to be a non-combatant.
He volunteers to be a soldier?
Yes. But he wants to be a battlefield medic. He gets to boot camp, and at boot camp he meets the Sergeant Major, played with brilliant, you know, power, as a good Sergeant Major should be in any film, by an actor called Vince Vaughn.
I've heard of him, but place him for me, please.
He is probably most famous for being in lots and lots of not very funny comedy films. But I know him best for being in a film called Swingers.
Which I don't think I've seen.
I think late 90s, with Jon Favreau.
Who's
now a film director for Jon Favreau. He made the Jungle Book remake. He made Iron Man, Iron Man 2.
Mm. He's Waste of my time.
Hmm. Is what?
Iron Man and Iron Man 2 were a waste of
A waste of your time.
Yeah.
So, I say quite a lot on my radio show that the last good movie that Vince Vaughn was in was Swingers.
Okay.
Which was in the late 90s.
Okay, so you agree that Iron Man 1 and 2 were...
No, that's to do with Jon Favreau.
It's nothing to
do with Vince Vaughn.
Okay, so do you or do you not agree that Iron Man 1 and 2 were a waste of my time?
I can't possibly comment on what you thought was a waste of your time. I enjoyed those two.
No, I'm sorry, I'm not asking you whether I think they're a waste of my time. I think that's clear. I want to know whether you think...
No, I don't think so. So, but I'm happy to report that I've now changed my mind about Vince Vaughn. In fact, the last good movie I saw him in was Hacksaw Ridge.
Okay. I've heard some things about Hacksaw
And he's
Ridge.
Very, very good in it. I mean, he's not treading any new ground. I think that the cinematic benchmark for the Sergeant Major is still... Gunnery Sergeant Toombs in Full Metal Jacket.
Full Metal Jacket was the phrase that I was desperately trying to conjure from my brain.
And he is, it is just the benchmark.
And every other film is a tribute to it, including Aliens.
Yes.
Including, like, all
these... Aliens was before Full Metal Jacket.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, then, that ruins my point.
Although... The thing is that it takes so long for Stanley Kubrick to make a film that he probably didn't finish it until after Aliens was released.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That ruins my whole point.
Sorry, dude.
I mean, I think it's worth leaving this on record how wrong I was.
Yeah.
But could you please save my sense of self-respect by mentioning other films that were influenced by Full Metal Jacket.
Other films that were influenced by Full Metal Jacket. What, in terms of...
What about that bug film?
That bug film? That bug film. Which one?
Come on, save me!
What happens in the bug film?
Yeah, a load of bugs.
Oh, Starship Troopers.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so yes. Clancy Brown plays a Sergeant Major who also played the Kurgan in Highlander.
Okay, okay, that was a long time
ago. And he is definitely influenced by Full Metal Jacket. Yeah.
Influenced by Full Metal Jacket, yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, definitely. So,
okay, I feel so much better.
I think that Full Metal Jacket contains the grandmother, or the mother, the great-grandmother.
The great-mother-grand.
Of all Sergeant Major performances.
I think Full Metal Jacket is the beginning and the end of Sergeant Major.
Because although he is utterly terrifying, and he's he terrifies everyone around him.
And he shouts in your face.
He is incredibly funny.
He shouts in your face.
Yeah. And the stuff that comes out of his mouth is phenomenally rude.
Yeah.
And yet, despite all of that, you laugh at what he's saying. Because it is funny.
And you fear him.
Do you ever fear him? Because he looks like he can handle himself.
Yeah.
So Vince Vaughn plays a Sergeant Major who doesn't look like he's in great shape, to be honest.
Hang on, what film were you in?
Hacksaw Ridge.
Oh, Hacksaw Ridge.
Back to Hacksaw Ridge.
Which I've not seen, so.
But he does deliver a really good performance.
Mm-hmm.
And the scene where they have to pick up guns...
Mm-hmm. What do you mean they have to pick up guns?
Well, they have to learn how to shoot a rifle.
Uh-huh. Are they on the floor?
No. The rifles are all stacked up in a line.
Right.
The platoon's all in a line. And right. He says, go and grab a gun.
Right.
And they all go and grab a gun, except for Desmond Doss, played by Andrew Garfield.
Who won't.
And there's one gun left. And Vince Vaughn's Sergeant Major says, why haven't you picked
up your gun?
No, he very... reasonably says,
pick up your gun, you scum!
No, he doesn't. He says,
wow.
Why haven't you picked up your gun? Is it not big enough for you? In a kind of sarcastic way. And of course, Doss says, no, I don't use guns, I don't do violence.
Right.
And there follows a very sarcastic, ironic conversation between the two. He said, but this is a boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
And you are here to learn how to kill
this
people.
This is the camp about how you learn how to pick up guns and shoot people.
And it's then that they discover he's a conscientious objector and he wants to be a battlefield medic.
So why did he volunteer?
Because he wants to help.
But why?
But what's in the rules is...
Well, at least for other people to kill people.
According
for
to the colonel, played by a dude from Avatar... I'll carry on and I'll think of his name in a minute.
Brad Pitt.
No, not Brad Pitt, wasn't an Avatar. Sam something.
Mendes.
No. Sam Mendes.
There's definitely a Sam.
Sam Worthington.
Okay.
Sam Worthington. The colonel, played by Sam Worthington, very calmly and logically explains to Desmond Doss that in order for him to be in combat, he needs to complete basic training, and that includes...
killing people.
Includes shooting a gun. Learning how to shoot a gun.
Right.
And Desmond Doss says, well, I'm not going to do that. So they try and get rid of him by proving he's a Section 8, which means he's mentally unfit.
Mm-hmm.
He's physically able to do it. So they proceed to court-martial, which is like, the nuclear option, effectively.
Mm-hmm. It's what they did to conscientious objectors.
Yeah. And they're all ready to do this court-martial when his father arrives with a letter from a brigadier general saying that his son's right to not shoot a weapon but complete basic training are protected under the US Constitution. So he completes his training without having fired a shot. And that middle section of the film is very well done, because the sort of authority figures around him initially look to him as a bit of a joke, but they slowly come to realise that he is serious. He's not messing around. He's not loopy. He's sincere about what he believes in, and they start to sympathise with him, even though their hands are tied about what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
So when this letter arrives that says he can do it, they're actually quite relieved,
mm-hmm.
because they want him to finish it, really. because they see that he is sincere in what he wants to do.
This is a weird situation.
Mm.
Let's continue and we'll try and address the weird situation.
Okay, so the third part of the film is set in Okinawa in Japan, in the eponymous place called Hacksaw Ridge, which is a battlefield at the top of a mountain that is just looks like... if you were to look at a Bosch painting that depicted hell, that's what it would look like. It's just littered with...
Who's Bosch?
A painter. Hieronymus Bosch.
Mm-hmm.
Quite famous paintings, actually. Shall I find one for you to look at?
No.
Okay. You probably recognise.
No, yeah, because that won't work on the podcast.
No, I know. Anyway, maybe we could put a link.
No.
So that's what it looks like.
So, so like there's fire or...?
Just bodies everywhere, entrails,
what, before
limbs. When they get there, there's already been there's already been a massive
battle
already.
There are bodies everywhere.
So they're like reinforcements.
Okay. Right, well, then that validates and what my they refusal find, to let you show me a picture which would not have helped.
Fair enough. What they find...
Audiologically.
...is they don't find any Japanese on the battlefield.
Okay.
They find lots of American dead.
Right.
And they start advancing across the battlefield, and then there's a surprise attack from underground.
Mm-hmm.
And they get pinned down by enemy fire, and there's, you know, it's a bloodbath. And we know that you've seen Apocalypto, right? You haven't seen Apocalypto?
No.
We need to talk about that on another podcast.
Okay, let's do that.
But, you know, Mel Gibson appears to have an itch to scratch about violence.
He seems to like it.
He really does.
Whipping people.
He really does portray it on screen in a very realistic, unflinching way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not judging it. He's just saying this is what war looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not pretty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this isn't an honourable battlefield. This is a nasty, horrible battle that's going on.
Okay, are there other films that express the war?
I think the opening of Saving Private Ryan is pretty visceral.
Yeah. Is that also...
That's Second World War.
No, but that's not...
That's in Europe.
Him.
No, that's Spielberg.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's certainly Apocalypto has pretty groovy violence in it.
Right, but is it about war?
Kind of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm out of my depth. Continue.
I'm out of my head.
I'm out of my depth.
Yeah.
I don't know where, or what, head-wise.
So he portrays this battle, you know, in incredibly visceral detail.
Because he likes the... Yeah. He likes the close-up.
So he's,
physical, you know,
we see people being cut in half by bullets and guts flying out and legs being, you know, the grenades and mortar bombs. And, you know, there's this quite unrelenting series of images.
What's he doing? What's...
He's showing us that war is hell.
Okay.
It's not nice.
Okay, but this man who doesn't want to kill people.
Okay, so he is there as a medic.
Mm-hmm.
And what we see from his
point... to support the people who are killing people.
Yes. What we see is him tending to wounded and getting them off the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
And we see him do that with efficiency and, you know, with a great deal of bravery because he's putting himself in the line of fire.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting about this sequence is that back at boot camp, there was one of the other recruits... took against him in quite a big way, considered him to be a coward.
Mm-hmm.
But on the battlefield, he sees that he's not a coward at all and becomes his protector.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a guy with a gun who protects him to allow him to do his job.
Mm-hmm.
But then the Americans have to withdraw because they're getting quite badly beaten. And Desmond Doss... stays behind.
Is that our hero?
to get as many people off the battlefield as possible who mm-hmm. are left behind. And what he does is quite incredible. So he drags them back or carries them on his shoulders back to the edge of the hill where there is like a rope ladder, mm-hmm. like a massive rope ladder. Mm-hmm. There's probably a name for one of those, but I can't think what it is. I'm going to call it a rope ladder.
Mm-hmm. I think that is a name.
Okay. And he ties a rope around them and then lets them down gently to the bottom mm-hmm. where they get picked up by other medics and taken mm-hmm. back.
Okay.
And he just keeps saving them.
Mm-hmm.
He saves the Sergeant Major who's been injured.
Mm-hmm.
He saves a couple of other guys. And he does this sometimes whilst being under enemy fire and being unable to protect himself.
Mm-hmm.
And it is that final sequence of the film is absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable that it happened, but he did win a Medal of Honor
mm-hmm.
for his actions. I think at that time, I'm not sure if he's the only conscientious objector to win the Medal of Honor
mm-hmm.
for what he did. And that, for me, was the payoff of the film.
Mm. Okay, so it's the final action sequence.
Yeah. And it really is... It's incredible. The camera keeps coming back to his face as he lies exhausted on the ground and just saying, okay, I can do one more. I can just do one more.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps going back.
So it's a man who shows courage.
Yeah, fortitude, great physical, just physical strength, mental strength to be able to carry on doing what he's doing. And that part of it is enormously effective.
Mm-hmm.
I think that...
So this is a film about him?
Yes, very much so. Yeah, but also about him and also about the way that he relates to the world and how other people who don't fully understand what he's on about try and relate to him.
Mm.
People who are in the business of signing up so they can kill people.
Yeah, so there's a lot of people who are won over. The way you describe it, there's a lot of people who are won over by his behaviour.
Yes.
Despite not understanding his philosophy.
So yeah, definitely.
Where I find myself is, from an abstract point of view, not understanding his philosophy because how does it make sense to support a war effort but refuse to kill people? All that means is that you offload the burden of killing people
onto
other people.
Yeah. And the other thing is, the other thing that I thought of as I was watching this film is that you are relying on and asking other people to save you
mm-hmm.
because you cannot defend yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, for example, this person who becomes his defender.
Yes. And dies.
Is necessary.
Dies defending him.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're kind of unfeasible as a member of this fighting force if there aren't other people prepared to risk their lives to save you or to protect you
mm-hmm.
in your role of protecting other people who've been shot and
yeah.
so on.
Yeah.
So how does this make you a noble figure? But I think you've made quite a convincing case that life is not as simple as having a philosophy that makes sense. If someone shows courage...
Yeah, and he does show a great deal of courage.
And physical bravery,
yeah.
then soldiers are going to respect you for that.
Yeah.
In the middle of a battle, soldiers who expect basically from you that you will show physical bravery and you won't panic.
Yeah. And he doesn't panic.
If you achieve physical bravery and not panicking, then soldiers are going to respect you for it.
Mm.
He's doing a useful job on the battlefield.
Oh, yeah.
But
he saves...
It leaves you with this question of what your principle's about. When you're supporting the effort of killing people, but you're refusing to actually physically kill people yourself.
Yeah. I'm just seeing how many people he saved. No, I can't find it. Oh, here we go. 75 soldiers.
75
in one people. Night.
What did he achieve?
Hmm? Say that again.
What did he achieve? Like, if he hadn't turned up for that battle?
If he hadn't gone there, we have to... I think you have to say that those 75 soldiers may not have been saved. Because none of the other medics stay behind.
Mm-hmm.
They all evacuate with everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So if he wasn't there, those men would not have lived.
And therefore the other side would have won
more? Well, no, because I think that the men he saved were discharged because of their injuries. You know, they're very badly injured.
Mm-hmm.
But they lived. They went home.
What's the point of him?
He saved lives.
So those people went home and lived?
Yes.
But he signed up to support the war effort.
Which he is doing.
How?
In saving their lives.
But they went home.
They went home, yeah, but they were on the battlefield.
It sounds to me like he signed up to help people get home from the battlefield.
Yeah, which is surely better than dying in a puddle on a battlefield.
But how does it support the war effort? Or did he not support the war effort?
Okay, so you got the Sarge out, who wasn't so badly injured. So the Sergeant Major goes back to the battlefield.
So, okay, so some people got hurt. He got them out. I mean, maybe this is a bigger question than a podcast can address.
Maybe.
But what was his position?
He's a battlefield medic.
He refused to kill people.
Yeah.
But he helped people stay alive.
Yeah.
Who would kill people tomorrow if yes. they were alive?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So he patched them up and sent them back out if they were able to go back out onto the
battlefield. So what is his position?
That's it. I don't know what else you want to say.
So I support killing people, but I won't kill people. I'll have someone else do that for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've covered that. So he has other people protect him
mm-hmm.
and do the killing.
Okay. Film yeah. glorifying him.
Yeah, absolutely does, yeah.
Continue.
Yeah, it makes him into a hero, for sure. A hero who never fires a gun.
But how is he a hero?
Because he saved people's lives.
It's so they could go and kill other people.
Yeah, if you want to boil it down to that simple thing, yeah. That's what he does.
Right. What do you mean, if I want to boil it down?
So because that's what you... Yeah, that's what he
does.
That's
what he did?
Yeah.
So how is he good?
Well, I don't think he's good. I'm not saying he's good. I'm saying that...
And he's clearly brave.
He is brave, yeah. For sure. Yeah.
Well, maybe we men prefer brave to good.
Maybe. I think that... I think that what makes him interesting is that he sticks to his beliefs and he sticks to his... because this is driven by his religion. He's a Seventh-day Adventist. So he doesn't compromise that to go and help with the war effort. I think that's interesting.
How is that... How is he not compromised?
Well... He justifies it by saying, I'm not going to pick up a gun and shoot somebody.
Yeah. Instead, I'm going to help someone else pick up a gun and shoot somebody.
Yeah. So he justifies that in his own mind. I'm not saying it's right, but this is what's portrayed in the film.
But how can we begin to justify that in our minds?
I hadn't really thought about that at all.
But I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
To who?
To me. I mean, how is that a principled position? Okay, so I understand believing that you shouldn't kill people.
Mm.
But that's not the position he's taking, right? I mean,
it is though, because he doesn't kill people.
Yeah,
he doesn't kill people.
But he patches... I mean, he's part of the war effort.
Yeah. you're trying to convince me of something that you've got in your head, but I'm not going for it.
He's part of an army. He joins an army.
He does.
His intention is to kill people.
It is. But he squares that in his own head. And this did happen.
I mean, this is, yeah, the fact that this happens is what the only thing that makes this interesting, right?
Yeah. It's not made up. You know, he did actually do this, and he manages to, you know, reconcile that in his mind, that he can do this and still remain, you know, righteous in whatever way he believes he's righteous. Whether we think he's wrong or not, I'm not really sure if it's a point or not. But it is interesting that I think that he is... He's not portrayed as being particularly pious in the film. But I think the way in which you know, the people that like him protect him to their own detriment is troubling. Because... You know, this guy who is initially at odds with him and then on the battlefield protects him, he dies because he's protecting him and he's not looking after himself. And that's a problem.
Okay, so isn't this just because we value bravery over making sense?
Yeah, probably, yeah. I think that's probably true.
Because he's clearly brave.
He is extremely brave.
He stays on the battlefield when other people run away. And he helps the war effort in ways that are clear. So the only thing that is left to be concerned about is, does his position make any sense?
Well, I think that... If we were to talk about, say, a battlefield medic who doesn't hold his views, but presumably they would be armed and they could fire a weapon if they wanted to. But if you're a medic, you probably don't have much chance to do that because you're concentrating on saving life. So I think there is a contradiction when you look at people who sign up for the army to be a medic. There is definitely a strange contradiction there in that you are there to save people's lives who are there to kill other people.
Mm-hmm.
It is a strange thing that's going on there.
Yeah, but when you're a medic, when you sign up for military service and you become a medic, you're choosing a role.
Yeah.
In a war effort, which essentially covers, you know, most useful role I can serve in making sure that as many of the enemy are dead as possible.
And as many of our people are alive.
Yeah. So, yeah, but exactly. But the way I can kill most of my enemies is to preserve the life of our soldiers so they can kill more of our enemies.
Yes.
And
yeah.
That is a rational, if disturbing, brutal position.
Yes.
But probably not as brutal, but approximately as brutal as becoming an ordinary soldier where your role is essentially...
To kill the enemy.
For as long as I can stay alive, I will kill as many of the enemy soldiers as possible.
Yeah.
But this chap's position was... I think it's wrong to kill people, so I will definitely keep the people who are trying to kill people alive as long as possible.
He also saves a couple of Japanese soldiers as well.
Okay, that changes things a little bit.
I'd forgotten about that. But they don't make it, funnily enough.
How convenient.
Well, I think that... I'll tell you what happens. So he saves one that we see. And then we see in a cutaway to the bottom of the hill a couple of the medics talking to the colonel, saying that these guys just keep coming down. He's just, you know, bringing them down one by one. We even had a couple of Japanese soldiers, but they didn't make it. the inference there being that they executed them. Mm-hmm. So it was all for nothing.
So he brought them down and then some other people killed
That's what I got from it. I might be wrong about that. Mm-hmm. But the tone of the voice and the way it was delivered suggested to me that they shot them.
Okay, so this chap puts himself in the battlefield, in the line of fire. He's physically brave. And he does his best to preserve life. Baddie or goodie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the story.
And people respect him and support him.
They do, and it takes some time for them to respect him and support him.
Because of his physical bravery.
Yeah.
Eventually, the state honours him.
Yes.
Essentially because of his physical bravery.
Yes. Yeah.
Certainly not because of his principles.
No.
Stance.
If, he would not have received the Medal of Honour if he hadn't done what he did.
Yeah. If he'd refused, for example, to support the troops in their killing of human beings.
Mm. Yeah. That's right. So it is an interesting story. It does throw up some interesting questions about what we value. And the thing that troubles me the most, I'll say it again anyway, is that whilst he doesn't have a weapon, somebody else with a weapon has to protect him.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst they're doing that, they're not protecting themselves. And that's a problem. Because you've effectively got one person who is a drain of resource. But of course, he then saves so many people on his own that that becomes a moot point, in a way.
So what's the film's position on this philosophising we've just done for far too long?
For far too long. We should probably trim that.
It's not that bad. 44 minutes.
What's the film's position?
Doesn't care. Just likes torture.
The film's position is that he is brave,
mm-hmm.
and that he believes in his own principles,
mm-hmm.
even if other people do not.
Mm-hmm.
And that he manages to convince, you know, like the colonel, the sergeant major, and people around him that he is worthy of being protected,
mm-hmm.
because of his principles and the fact that he's actually very good at what he does. He's probably one of the best medics that you see in the film. So that's what it portrays. But, you know, there is a thing about the fact that he's a resource drain, but then massively redeems that resource drain at the end of the film.
Is it really just that Mel Gibson likes to show gore?
Now, that's an interesting point, because I said it's a film of three parts. The first part is very, very, almost pedestrian in the way that it's shot. It looks a lot like the kind of thing that you would see on TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of has a made-for-TV aesthetic to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite tightly shot.
So how... What does that mean?
Yeah, actually, I get asked about that a lot, what it's made for TV look like. I'd say the lighting is perfunctory. The shots are quite pedestrian looking.
You mean it looks like you didn't spend much money on it?
Maybe. Maybe it was shot quickly.
Or just looks ordinary, it looks like derivative.
It looks ordinary.
Okay.
Yeah. So... Yeah, it looks ordinary, and it's also quite melodramatic and quite a little bit over the top, a little bit unbelievable at
mm-hmm.
times.
Mm-hmm.
The second part of the film, where it goes to boot camp, is a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third part, where it goes to the battlefield, is, you know, the violence that's orchestrated is jaw-dropping
mm-hmm.
in its ferocity
mm-hmm.
and technical. The technical achievement of it is quite something. And then his bravery and mental fortitude that's portrayed towards the end of the film is something to behold. So, you know, it is a film of three parts. I think that the first part is not great, and the second part is better, and the third part is amazing.
Mm-hmm. And does it build on the gore violence films that Mel Gibson's been producing recently?
Yeah, I think it does. I think that it's less fetishistic.
Less?
Yes.
Fetishistic?
Yes.
Okay.
So I found The Passion of the Christ mm-hmm. to be incredibly fetishistic mm-hmm. violence. Lingering.
Okay.
Lingering.
Okay.
This is not. It mm-hmm. does show a lot of violence. It shows, you know, as I said, like visceral guts and legs and limbs and that kind of thing. But none of it's dwelt upon.
Mm-hmm.
None of it's... I do remember a lot of the shots because they're very vivid.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't hold the camera on them for long.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an important distinction there.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, it seems more real.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that when you have a film like The Passion of the Christ, which is essentially kind of a horror movie,
mm-hmm.
because it fetishizes it, if that's even a word, it reduces some of the power.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas because this doesn't linger on things, the images are very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that war, as I said earlier on, is horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the Fetish of the Christ.
Mm-hmm.
The Passion of the Christ. But, yeah, the descriptions I've heard is that it sort of glories in the violence.
Most certainly it does, yes.
And you can't really claim to be horrified by something that you're glorying in.
No, that's definitely a problem with that film.
Mm.
Yeah. Plus the fact that for so much of it, I just wanted to be watching Life of Brian.
Uh-huh.
Because it's no fun. If I were to give it if I was in the business of putting taglines on movies,
uh-huh.
I'd say this is the least fun I've ever had in the cinema.
Really? No, but you quite liked it, right?
What, The Passion of the Christ?
No, or did you hate it?
No, I didn't like it.
Okay.
I watched the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I suspect I would quite like the fetishized violence of it.
Mm. I mean, it is technically impressive.
Mm-hmm.
If that kind of thing floats your boat.
Yeah. I like a bit of...
And Gibson does know how to put a film together.
Right.
Yeah. He definitely knows how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
There is also a sense in Hacksaw Ridge that maybe he's working out some personal demons.
In some more way. Than in the other things, or...?
Yeah, or maybe as much as,
mm-hmm.
but in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly the violence, you know, a man who seems to be kind of alone in thinking the way that he does,
mm-hmm.
against everybody else who thinks a certain way,
mm-hmm.
Almost seems like him pushing back
mm-hmm.
against the establishment, or, you know, because, you know, he says some pretty horrible things in the past. And he's done some pretty horrible things. But he's still working.
Gibson, the...
yeah.
The person.
The real guy.
Yeah.
The real guy.
Yeah. It turns out we're all pretty flawed.
Definitely. I think that's true. Should we do some plugging?
I don't feel like plugging after just contemplating my own flawedness. But yeah, go.
Okay, so
I'll try and recover my own.
All right. I present a movie reviews and music and DVD picks and movies on TV show on Glastonbury FM 107.1 in the Glastonbury Street.
Street in Wales.
The Wales area of Somerset. It's on between 6 and 7 on a Thursday evening, repeated between 2 and 3.
If you just turn down Glastonbury Street...
Towards the Wells.
No, on your right, you'll see the Wells as you pass by.
That's it. Repeated between 2 and 3, there are podcast highlights. Search for Movie Mashup. I have 59 subscribers now.
Hoo-ha.
No.
59, that's way more than none.
So, listener, you could be number 60 if you're tuning in for the first time to this podcast.
I would have thought, if you listen to this, you'll be number 600.
Yeah, Movie Mashup. One word, no camel case, no spaces, no underscores.
Surely if you add some camels...
to the case.
Or some underscores, you'll still find it.
Probably. But I'm not going... Well, okay, I'm instructing people not to add those things.
I see. Do not add those things.
Yeah.
No finding is assured.
It won't be strong and stable. Go.
Okay. Okay. I'm a deeply flawed human being with...
But you are strong and stable.
with more faults than I would care to...
Which is more than can be said for some people.
Outline. I mean, I think that compared with me, Mel Gibson is pretty strong and stable
as a human. So? Okay.
But as part of working out in fear and trembling, you know, what it is, what it means to be human. I write a blog. On that blog, I write stuff about coding, programming stuff that I've learned recently. Hmm. That's on artificialworlds.net/blog. On our about page for the Good Robot Andes, you'll find all kinds of links to all kinds of stuff.
The About page.
The Abood page. No, you say it.
Abood.
Yeah, that's better. Because I said it wrong. there are links there onto Twitter and hopefully Mastodon.social if I've updated it.
Ah, okay.
Mastodon.social is a new social network which is like Twitter but better. I make YouTube videos about programming. I'm doing a workshop about how to write your own programming language for women who code. I'm at the end of July, I'm doing a little workshop at the Raspberry Pi Jam in Egham about basically beginning like your first coding session.
Nice.
I need to write that or even think about what I might do.
Your first codding session.
I don't think it's pronounced codding.
It isn't, but I like to call it that.
I think the problem is that I like to refer to code as cod.
Cod.
But when you're talking about coding, it's not
coding.
It's not pronounced codding, is it? Because you need an extra D for that.
You would.
Yeah, so,
cod piecing.
I think that's inappropriate.
I don't think so.
Also there is also a podcast called the Imagine Thought Experiment podcast where hopefully I approach some things more seriously.
Hmm.
Like whether God exists, whether hell exists.
Hell is other people. As a Bertrand Russell, I think, said that.
Yeah, he thought a lot of things.
He was a philosopher. He was paid to do those kinds of things.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Bertrand Russell came up with something really important, which was, this sentence is a lie.
Wow.
But whether he should be taken literally over what hell is, I think is a different question.
Mm.
I mean, so just to divert onto that stuff, there are 13 episodes to this podcast.
Mm.
They're largely me waffling on at great length on my own with no one to say, please be quiet, this is a stupid thing to say. On issues which are...
You could have got me to be in the studio and then I would have done that.
You know what? Perhaps I should have done that. It's me waffling on late at night about things like whether God exists, whether we live forever. You know, okay, so that, I mean, this is... And the horror of the idea that we might live forever, among other things. And, for example, questions like whether anything matters.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah. I explored that for, like, 28 minutes.
If we're all part of a matrix-like simulation, then nothing really does matter.
And I actually used the question of whether we're part of a simulation as part of one of the discussions that I made in that podcast about living forever. So one possible theory of living forever might be that we copy our own consciousness and we end up with a copy of our own consciousness in some other entity, in some future life.
So it's some kind of reincarnation type thing.
Yeah, or just, you know, like we're part of a software system, so we get copied into some other software system.
Yeah, okay.
It's meaningless, yeah, but it kind of would continue our life. So it's kind of a straw man to say one possible theory of living after death would be that you just take the current life that you have and just carry it on. In another similar life in future. And that, I mean, that seems crazy, but it's kind of, it helps us discuss what it might mean to continue living after you die.
It's no more crazy than, I think it was Stephen Hawking talked about the idea that when matter and light enter a black hole, it gets copied and stored. Like the fingerprint of it gets copied and stored in the black hole. It's kind of data, because it's got to go somewhere. And that just seems like I'm just making a sound with my hands.
You are making a sound with your hands.
It's like head, mind gone kind of thing. Yeah. I just don't. I understand what he's talking about, but I just can't get my head around how that would work.
And it's a load of rubbish. So,
well, it's all theoretical, isn't it?
I mean, I think the last thing that Stephen Hawking said that made any sense was a peer-reviewed paper about 15 years ago.
Right.
Oh, of course.
I'm just drinking water. I think we've talked to ourselves sober.
I haven't. So, in the conclusion...
That's because you drank my cider when I stopped drinking.
Yeah. In conclusion, there is... If you are the one person in a million who wants to hear more of me with no moderating influence talking rubbish about this kind of metaphysical rubbish, check out the Imagine Thought Experiment podcast, I don't know how long we've been talking about.
Too long. Probably.
Continue.
Continue.
Yeah, if you don't care about such things, then check out
something else,
like the my programming YouTube, or the podcast movie mashup highlights.
59 subscribers, you could be the 60th.
I'm actually not a subscriber, so I will definitely make myself.
I'm making 60th. A face that says what.
I was saving myself up until there were 59.
Wow. Okay, so you can be number 60. You don't win anything for being number 60.
All right. Well, if I save myself up till...
You still won't win
99.
Anything.
99.
What, to be the 100th?
Yeah.
Well, actually, you might win something for that. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll have a think about if there's a prize in the offing.
We'll see.
You could get to do a podcast with me. How about that?
I would really like to.
There you go. So if you wait up to number 99, then we can do a podcast together. We could call it the Good Robot Handies.
Okay. It's we've got a long time.
We have.
And I have no real awareness of how we will trim this into a podcast.
Yeah, we should probably trim the stuff in the middle where I got really defensive about Hacksaw Ridge.
I don't think so. I think that... I don't think so.
Okay, fair enough.
Maybe we should trim the bit where I got all offensive.
Offensive, defensive.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Off, yes. Okay. Goodbye, listener. It's been real.
Yeah. Cheers.
Bye-bye.